Welcome to another episode of At the Table with Patrick Lencioni, where everything we talk about is related to organizational health and the world of work. I'm your host, Pat Lencioni, joined by the full crew of Tracy, Cody, and Bo. All together, how are you guys doing today?
Pretty good.
Great.
Great.
All righty. Matt's behind the glass. Karen's with me here. Everybody's here. And before we get into the topic, Cody, I want to just say this. As everybody knows who listens to this podcast, our podcasts range from extremely practical topics to more theoretical or liberal arts subject matter. We like to mix it up as long as it's interesting and useful. Well, today it's going to be one of the more theoretical episodes, but we think it might be as important as any topic we've ever explored. But it's kind of difficult because we want to make sure that we communicate this topic clearly and not in a trite or shallow way. We tried to record this yesterday and decided we needed to re-record it because it did kind of seem overly simplistic. And last night I was going to bed and I was like, I just don't think that made sense. And this topic is anything but simplistic. It's really, really critical, I think. It may very well be the deepest, most fundamental discussion we've ever had on At the Table about work, because it gets at the very reason why people join companies and go to work. So let's dive in as though we're sitting around in a bunch of couches as friends exploring this topic for the first time, when in fact we're exploring it for the second or third time. But I love to let our listeners kind of take part in our research and development. And so that's what we're going to talk about. And Cody, what is the topic?
Working towards healing.
Yes, working towards healing. And really, we're going to talk a lot about the idea that here's the premise. Maybe, just maybe, the real purpose of work, it's not just to make money. We know that if that's the only reason why you go to work is to get money to pay for your family, that that's not enough. But some people think that. There's plenty of companies that think that. And of course, that's important. And other people would say it's because we have gifts, and we talk about working genius, and it's a chance to use your gifts in a way that gives you joy and energy and that contributes to the world. That's really important. But maybe there's another reason. And this came to us recently when we were at a conference with John Gordon, Cody, and we were talking about with a bunch of leaders about their wounds and about healing. And it was so clear that so many people make the biggest breakthroughs in their lives around addressing their underlying wounds or their areas for development when they're at work. And maybe work is meant to be the place where we heal. Maybe work is the hospital for our lives, because you only heal your wounds in community. And the community that is most regular and consistent in our lives is the people we work with. Mm-hmm. And so when we're at work together, and the four of us work together, the six of us that are on here, we spend so much time with one another. And this is where we practice improving and understanding one another and giving each other feedback so that we can ultimately be better spouses and parents and friends and neighbors. So that's what we're going to talk about today, is the workplace. Maybe it's intended to be the place where we heal. And this is not soft or touchy-feely. I think it's pretty critical, because maybe that's something we can be more intentional about. So discuss amongst yourselves.
It was pretty interesting to be in that room full of all these great leaders doing great things at their company. And they were really vulnerable about the fact that they all were bringing some wound or past experience or lack of healing to the leadership that they have in their own companies. And as you did the opening, something we didn't say yesterday, which I think was apparent to me as you're doing the opening, is like, maybe you even go back a little bit more, up a little higher, and say, the purpose of life is healing. And if we're going to spend 8 hours a day at work, maybe it's not whether it is or is not. Maybe it should be. You know, like, if that's where we're going to spend the 8 hours a day with our colleagues, and I love that you say we heal in community, then maybe that's the lens by which we design it that way. And maybe we've been a little too haphazard about it.
That's a great point. That's a great way to say it. If the purpose, and you know, Pope Benedict, the previous Pope, I'm Catholic, he said that he thinks the whole purpose of life is to heal, you know, and Jesus says in the Bible, more than anything, be healed. And so we come into the world, we get injured, and then we're supposed to continue healing. And if that's true, then why would the 8, 9, 10 hours a day we spend at work not be part of that? Especially if these are the people we spend the most time with even more than my friends outside of work, who I get to see once or twice a week if I'm having a good week. Even my wife and I only spend 2 or 3 hours together at night when I go home because we have so many responsibilities. I spend 9 hours a day with you all. And should I be putting my healing, my personal development, my growth on hold during that time? Or maybe this is the place where we practice.
First thing I think about when you tee up this subject, to be totally honest, is it feels a little over my skis. And even with the way you describe that of sitting in a couch and sitting back, my wiring is more like, let's drive to a point. Let's make it interesting. Let's try to make it compelling. Like, what do we do with this? And this is so much more, okay, let's have a conversation. Let's really unpack that. And then as you describe that, Cody, I thought, wow, that's just such a different lens to see my coworkers, to see people walking around that I might be able to participate in them getting better. Wow, that's not a way I typically think about the folks I work with.
And you know, some people, Bo, might say, that's asking too much of a company. So they hire people. So now they have to contend with all their wounds and all their baggage and all their stuff. Or, gee, I'm just a manager or a leader. I can barely manage that. I'm supposed to actually pry into people's lives. And I think that the point here is not that that's the, you're the primary responsibility. You're the primary provider of that. But shouldn't work be an environment where that happens? And as we were yesterday, Karen was saying, it's not a formal program. It's not an HR program where everybody goes through this thing. It's more about, we enter into relationship with one another, and one of the things we talk about is our healing. You know, Tracy, yesterday, I came to work and I told you about something my son, who's 17, was going through. He had this weird experience where he said, I felt like I was observing myself talking to my friends. I wasn't even there. And he went online and found out that there's actually a word for that. There's like, it's not a disorder, but it's a psychological process or something that people go through. And I said that to Tracy, and she said, oh my gosh, my son had the same thing in his senior year of high school where he felt like everything was kind of an out-of-body experience. And so I got to go home and say to my son, hey, I know somebody else who had that same thing. We figured out what it was. And if that wasn't part of our world here, and I can tell you, we have one of those every day at work. Where somebody is bringing a challenge or something, and it's an offhand comment or an interesting conversation, and we dive into that. I go home that night and I become a better parent as a result of that. But is that what it's supposed to be like? Do companies realize that that's going on? Should they be encouraging it? And I just wonder if most of our work experiences allow that to happen, or encourage that to happen, or prevent it from happening.
So much of that feels like, you know how there's that thing of whatever role you're assigned to play, you kind of end up playing that role. And if I think my role at a company is worker or doer, then I will end up just doing that, or meeting leader, right? And what you're describing is, again, it's elevating this role of what a colleague is or a coworker is. I like that way you describe company, the breaking of bread, the togetherness, that even just that lens helps me see the people around me differently. And actually, it helps me see me differently. What if I saw myself coming to work as not just a doer, but as somebody who is in the process of getting better?
I love that, Bo. And you mentioned company, just to remind people, the Latin roots of that word is to break bread, coam and panie. And for some reason, when they said, hey, what are we going to call this thing where people get together and do stuff and work? And they said, we're going to call it a company because we come together to break bread. But I will tell you, in my life, the first few companies I worked with or worked at, it didn't feel like we were coming together to break bread. It felt like we were coming together to work ourselves to the bone so that our managers could make a lot of money. We might be able to make a lot of money, but there was not really anything considered about our well-being. And I'm not complaining, like, poor me, but that was the paradigm. And you're right. When I went to work there, I didn't even think it was my job to pour into my colleagues and to know what was going on in their lives. It was just so not a intentional or even covert thought about what we were doing there. And so I think you're right. When you're told this is what your job is, you might very well limit it to that. And if you're as a manager, your job is to maximize the revenue output of your team, that's going to have a very different lens that you're going to be looking through. I don't know. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. It does. Hey, at this point, I'm thinking that our listeners are probably like, wow, this is, I'm slightly uncomfortable with this concept because this requires crazy levels of vulnerability. So I'm hoping now, Pat, you could kind of paint the picture of what this actually looks like, because I don't think it's that scary.
No, it's not. In fact, I'm glad you said that, Tracy, because a lot of people can think, oh my gosh, am I supposed to be a psychotherapist when I'm somebody's manager? And what I like about this and the way you said it, Bo, is it's not just being a manager, it's being a coworker. And it's not just doing it for people below you on the org chart, like that's my responsibility. It's even for your manager. We're supposed to pour into one another. And John Gordon, one of my favorite people, and he wrote this great book called The One Truth. And one of the things he says, he goes, hey, if you're a teacher, it's not about the lesson plan. It's really the best teachers, the ones that love their students. And he said the best coaches, he works with all kinds of football coaches, college and pro. He goes, the best ones don't know the X's and O's the most. They love their players the most. And I really believe that there's nothing soft about that. The best managers, the best leaders, the best coworkers love their employees, coworkers, bosses the most. And as a result of that, if somebody said, well, what's the ROI of all this? You'd say the loyalty, the productivity, the engagement, the commitment, even the personal marketing you do to others. Every one of us who knows somebody that loves the place they work knows that those people feel loved when they're there. And if you don't, I don't care how many programs there are and how many benefits or perks, I don't think you're going to experience the level of personal healing that people are secretly looking for when they go to a place to work.
Yeah. And as you said that too, Tracy, I was like, I wonder if people are thinking, how do we get here? You know, Table Group, you guys are the teamwork and the org health people. And what made you even get to this place where you're exploring this? And I think it's actually very much related to when you said the word vulnerability. We talk about the fundamental basis, the foundation of teamwork is vulnerability. And as you go deeper and deeper with people and they're honest about their shortcomings and the way that they, you know, the things that prevent them from being whole, at some point you have to move from, oh, that's just information for me to get from you that helps me understand you, to as a colleague, a co-human being, someone who's interested in your development and wholeness, I want to receive that information and help build you up. And so it is very much related to trust and vulnerability and teamwork. And if that's the foundation of the pyramid, it's, you know, at the lowest level of vulnerability, we get to where there's a ceiling. The lowest level, there's not a ceiling now. There's like a granite floor where we're like, oh, beyond that is the wound. Let's try to crack into that and fix and heal and become whole.
Well, and as it turns out, Cody, we didn't know this when we started talking about vulnerability. We didn't really realize this until a few years ago. The root word in Latin for vulnerability, vulna, is wounds. So when we've been preaching vulnerability, like to trust each other, you have to be vulnerable with each other. And it's like that comes from you have to be open about the wounds that you have. And clearly then the reason to do that is because you're vulnerable about your wounds so that you can heal them. And so the fact that we've been talking about this for 27 years, there's something about going to work, wounds and all, and bringing them there, there's something that's part of work.
Do you think that this is for everybody? I don't mean to be a skeptic, but I'm just curious, do you think this is every company can do this, or every person could find healing in any particular organization?
I think it should be for everybody. I'll be normative. I think that every place of work should be a place where people can heal. Do I think that every company sees it that way? No. Do I think a lot of companies would like to? Yeah, I don't think they've thought about it. And then there are those companies that are going to say, listen, I don't really care about this. People come to work. We give them a paycheck. This is what we want for them. It's transactional. And I think a lot of young people today that have entered the workforce recently would probably buy into that because it has been that way. But the truth is, I think deep down inside, every person who walks out their front door and drives to work and walks into their place of work, deep down inside, they want to know that the relationships they have there are going to contribute to them getting better. Hmm. And so do I think it's, I think it should be for everybody. Yeah. Do I think everybody will buy into it? No. Hmm. No.
I also think like, you know, is this for everybody and every company? And I think that this, as we're exploring this, it's not like a binary thing. It's not like the onus of the leader or company is to make sure that person is fully healed. It's sort of like, hey, are you moving in the direction of wholeness because of the relationship and the environment at work? Or are you moving in the other direction? Are you having to swim upstream? But I do think, you know, we talked about it from the company standpoint. It's probably an equally good question to ask the employees, like that not all employees are going to work for that reason either. And so there's a cultural element of the companies that believe in this or see it through this lens that might be important, don't you think?
Absolutely. You know, we've worked with companies where we do the vulnerability exercise and people go, I don't want to do this. I don't like this. And usually that's just an initial reaction. We work through it and they're like, oh, that's great. But there's people that go, I really don't want the people at work to know what's going on in my life. I really don't want them to understand me. I don't. And that's when we go, well, you know, this is probably a cultural issue then. Is this company a fit for you? Because if the company believes in teamwork, which is vulnerability-based trust and conflict and commitment and accountability and results, and if the company really believes in that, and there's a person that says, I don't want any of that, then we have to say, hey, this is probably not the right place for you. And I think this is something that yesterday we didn't talk about very well, Tracy, you mentioned this, and that is, in order for somebody to go to a place of work and feel like they're healing and getting better and becoming a better version of themselves, they have to be a cultural fit. Mm-hmm. If the core values of that organization do not resonate with them, I think they're probably going to become less of the person they're meant to be. I think that's why core values are so important. Mm-hmm. You know, when I think of the first two places I worked, and I want to talk to you guys about where you've worked, the first two places I worked, and I think we have to ask this about everything, does it make me a better person by having worked there? Mm-hmm. In other words, did that environment encourage me to be a better person? Or did it make life harder? Was there tailwinds encouraging me to get better, or were there headwinds? And the first two companies that I worked at, it was all headwinds. I mean, I will say I did not become a better version of myself by working there. And if I did make any progress, it was in spite of the place I worked rather than because of it. But had I come out of college and said, I just want a place to work where they're going to grind me into the ground and I can prove that I can do it, and I can make as much money as I can and be really competitive against my coworkers, if that was my cultural set of values, then I'd say, well, maybe they did make me a better person. Mm-hmm. So I think this is why core values are so important, because if we don't match with the core values of that organization, healing is not going to happen. And fortunately, the first two places I worked at both of them for about 2 years before I realized this was gonna make me a version of myself that I didn't want to be.
And when you say healing and values, what I think about is wholeness, that if you're not aligned to the values of a place, you know, integrity comes from that word whole number, from integer, which means a whole number. And I think if I were to work at a company where I didn't align with the values and I was trying to become more like those values or trying to hide who I was, I'm never more and more on the journey to becoming whole. So simple, right? But it is so important. It just underscores the importance of being aligned, that our people are aligned to our values, because that is what will help them become healed.
And we've seen it so many times. Somebody who doesn't align with your values, they are getting sadder and sadder and more frustrated. And what we have to tell leaders is, let them go, because it is going to be a relief to them. You think by keeping them around, you are preventing them from feeling bad? No, you're actually making it worse and you're wounding them. And you know something, you guys? I think it might be worth getting very specific about what is a wound, you know? Because people are like, well, what is this wounded thing? It sounds so wimpy, I suppose. But there's a great book called Be Healed by a guy named Dr. Bob Schutz. And it changed my life, this book. And we're working through it right now in a lot of ways. But he lists like 7 wounds that people get from when they were young. And then they carry them into their adult life. And either they heal them or they use them to get through life and often think that they're not a wound at all, but they're actually a tool. But when you use your wounds and you don't heal them, you end up eventually burning out and having really bad things happen. So I think it might be good to actually use a few examples here so people don't think this is so theoretical. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's great.
So I don't have the list of all seven wounds right here in front of me, but I think I can probably remember. There are things like fear and shame and abandonment and rejection and confusion and powerlessness. And of course, I remembered six, but not all seven.
Hopelessness was another one and abandonment.
Yeah. Hopelessness, yes, and abandonment. And so, and you read those and you go, oh gosh, this sounds like a touchy-feely therapy session. But then there's words that go along with those, like things that people say to themselves, their self-talk, that correspond to those. And let me give you an example. Like, let's say there was a person who grew up feeling kind of shame. They were never good enough, right? And this is pretty common. And as a result of that, they work really hard all the time. They had to get good grades. They had to please their teachers, their coaches, their parents, because that was the only shot they had to feel worthy. Well, suddenly they become an overachiever. And in their adult life, they become workaholics, often the case. And they're like, I'll show them. And the problem is they make a vow that they'll never fail and that they'll always prove their worth. But they never really experience joy from that because it's always done out of using that wound. I talked to a guy this weekend at a men's retreat who said, my wound is the reason I succeeded in life. And I'm kind of afraid to heal it because I'm afraid it will stop me from being successful. But I know it doesn't make me happy and I need to look at it. Mm-hmm. All right. So imagine you have an employee that makes their numbers and they're always working hard and everybody else is like, man, that guy or that gal, they just bust their butt and they're always at the top of the list and they're always doing a great job. But you know there's something underneath it. And you know that there's not a sense of satisfaction in their life. So what are you supposed to do? And I'll ask you guys this question. So if you're in a healing company where you're their manager, what do you do there? Do you sit down and you schedule therapy with them and you just pretend you're a therapist, Dr. Phil, and you try to coach them through it? Like, how would you approach that?
Well, I think it's such an interesting question because if you're not the company that believes in this lens, all you do is promote and reward them. And continue to, you know, hey, we're going to win because of that wound. And a company that, in this conversation, if you have a different lens that this is about healing, I think it would be a really impactful conversation to say, hey, we love the results that we get from that, but we think it's coming at a cost to you personally, and it's maybe not coming from a place of wholeness. And we'd be willing to even sacrifice some of that if it meant that you're becoming a more whole person. How could we, where's that from? What is that? Do you know that you're, even if you weren't producing, do you know that you belong here and that we would welcome you and that you can thrive, you know?
Think about how different those two perspectives are. And I've been in both companies where they're like, that guy crushes himself. He doesn't have a good personal life. He's never at home with his family. Boy, his wife's always on his back, but man, he produces. Well, good for us. That is a fundamentally different outlook in the world than saying, we need to help that person in their life, regardless of the short-term impact that might have on our revenue. That's night and day difference.
I wonder when you said, what would you do for them if you're their manager? That maybe the first thing is to see them, is to not just see their outcome or their output or what they're doing, but to walk slowly through the office and actually, it comes back to some of what we talk about in employee engagement, to make sure that they're not anonymous, that they are seen and valued for who they are. That just seems like the obvious step one to me.
Yeah, that they say that is the first thing, to know somebody, to know, call them by name, to see what's going on and take an interest in them as a person.
And I thought that this actually also goes back to the core values thing that you were talking about earlier. I would imagine that being able to say you belong here because you fit this culture and not you belong here because you hit your numbers every quarter. And that might be that might touch the source of their wound in a way that they've never felt before, because they feel like, oh, the only reason I'm accepted is because of achievement.
In fact, many people go through their lives that way. They feel like, and the moment they fail, they cease to become worthy of another person's time and attention.
I wonder if the another thing that as a leader you can do, and we're leaders whether we have title or not, right? The influence that you would have, the moral authority, the relational connection. One of the things we can do is to go first, is to model vulnerability, to be able to talk about a little bit about our own story or our own wrestling and struggles and healing.
That's huge. I think when somebody says, hey, you know something, when I was your age, this is what I went through. Because let's just say you see somebody like that and you go, you go up to them and go, here's a book and here's the problem you have and here's your wounds. Let's talk about them. No, that's not how you're going to deal with it unless you're equipped for that. But what you can do is you can give them an opening to see that if they do have some issues, that they wouldn't be at fault or in a bad place for having said that. And you could say, I went through this when I was your age or in your situation, or I have a friend who went through this and he's in a much better position now. And it gives that person the opportunity to say, I'd like to know more about that. And I'd like to know I'm going to be encouraged to do that. And that you're not just neutral about it, but you actually want them to get better. You know, one of the things, Karen just wrote me a great note here and it says, so why don't managers do this? And I think the number one reason is because what Cody said earlier is like, we don't even think about it that way. And I think there are a few companies out there that are like, hey, your job as a manager or a leader is to love your people as human beings. And they will produce for you as a result of that, as opposed to get them to produce and then love them for that production. But I think a lot of really well-intentioned leaders would say, gee, I don't have a psychology background and you don't need one to do this, of course. Or I don't want to meddle in their personal lives. And the truth is, they're bringing their personal lives to work. And when we don't meddle in it, what we're actually doing is ignoring it and making them feel like they're not supposed to share it. Or they say they're too busy, or it might violate some law, or I've never seen it done before, or isn't HR supposed to do that? And there's all kinds of not adequate but understandable reasons why we don't do this. And I think we have to have the courage to look at things and say, I think that these people would appreciate my love and I'd rather take a little bit of risk to do it than to avoid that.
And I might say, if somebody was pushing back to this, I might say, why don't you do this really? And probably the really has less to do with the busyness or the calendar or the HR or that. It's just, it's a little bit uncomfortable. And I think
I agree.
Would actually be really cool to lean into and say, hey, this is the kind of place that I want to work. And it feels a little uncomfortable to me, but it feels worth it.
You guys, I'm going to ask you a question. So I just read off those list of seven. Cody, thank you for helping with that. I'm not going to ask you to tell us which one, because this is not a podcast to do therapy online, because I'm not qualified to do that. But when I read those seven wounds, we'll go through them again: abandonment, rejection, fear, shame, confusion, hopelessness, and Cody?
Powerlessness.
Can you, I'm going to ask each of you, can you relate to one or two of those?
Absolutely.
Yep.
Absolutely.
So I shared that list with these 85 executives and I didn't know if they were going to go, it was in Texas. I didn't know if they were going to go back to California, you weirdo. But every one of them just sat there looking at the list and going, oh my gosh, I know this is impacting the way I manage. I know this impacts the way I lead. And of course they were saying, and I know it impacts me at home too. You know, what's that, Karen? Yeah, it impacts the way you love other people or that you're prevented from loving other people. And so none of those executives said this isn't relevant. In fact, it was a business conference to talk about leadership and teamwork and all this stuff. And when we got to those wounds, it stopped people in their tracks and they were like, I want to talk more about this. And I think that here's another thing you could do. Bo, I loved what you said about modeling the way. Sometimes you could just say, hey, here's an article. Here's a book I read. I think you would really like this and it would be helpful. Just doing that says to them, this is part of the ocean we swim in here. And you are not doing something wrong by entering into thinking about this stuff. It's part of what we do here.
And I would even say, Pat, that reaction in that room, and anybody who is listening to this is like, I guess that begs the question, so is it true that everybody has wounds? And it might vary by intensity or, but what would you say to that? Is it, you know, like, oh, hey, Pat, I don't have one of those. So how can I relate? You know,
Everybody has wounds. Nobody gets out of their childhood, their youth unscathed or bruised. Or the question is, do they heal them or do they let them fester? And sometimes you don't heal them, but it makes you a better at something in your life until you burn out. And sometimes it's really painful. The question though is, yes, everybody has wounds, but does everybody need therapy? Maybe they just need to read a book and become more aware of it. Maybe they need to do a little bit of their own CBT, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy. Maybe they do need to go see somebody. Maybe they need a life coach. I don't know, but I have yet to meet a human being who doesn't have one or more of these wounds. And just by being aware of it, doesn't actually start to make progress in getting better.
It's somewhat terrifying because we show up to work with our wound, whether we know it or not. We show up to every relationship, whether we know what our wound is or not. And, you know, it's just, that's a sobering reality and makes me want to do more of the work to understand my own wound better. And certainly to be the kind of friend that helps other people get better at work.
And I love that you said that because we have to put our own oxygen mask on before we can help other people with theirs. And so the first thing we can do is not just modeling the way by making ourselves an example, but by actually them knowing that we're working on our own. Cody, though, I want to give you the opportunity to say the quote because you remembered it. What did John Maxwell, another friend of ours, John Gordon say at the conference we were at when somebody asked the question, what happens if we help people heal and they leave?
Yeah. So somebody asked the question, hey, what if we put all this time and energy and human development and healing and pour into these people and they leave? And the answer, the poignant answer was, what happens if we don't do all that work and they stay? You know, and that was just an amazing way of putting that. It's like, boy, having... And you would think, you would like to think that everybody could take a step back and say, hey, an organization filled with more whole, healed people versus one that is less healed and whole. We got to all believe that the healed whole version of that is a better company doing better things, producing better results. And yet sometimes we're too terrified to do that work because what happens if they leave?
Yeah. I think that's profound. It's profound. There's never a good reason not to do that for somebody. That's never a good reason. So I'd like to the extent that we can land this plane, I don't think it's anywhere near being landed, but that we can land this episode. What are some practical tips that we would give to people listening to this to take the first small steps toward making the workplace an environment for community and healing, which is going to serve your business, going to serve your customers, going to serve your bottom line. But what would be some of the things that we've talked about or haven't yet talked about that we could say, hey, go out and do this?
Pat, I might say, I mean, if you haven't done it before, perhaps just starting small and doing something like the personal histories exercise, just to sort of get your bearings around what it feels like to be vulnerable with one another. So that might be a good starting place.
Right, because it starts with vulnerability. And the personal histories exercise, for people that don't know, is where you just go around and you say, here's where I grew up, here's how many kids were in my family, and this was the hardest challenge of my childhood, not even my inner childhood, just being a kid. And it's amazing how that little tiny short 15-minute exercise on a team begins to open people up to admire one another and feel comfortable sharing. Okay, there's one step.
I never recommend this on this podcast, but this feels like a great conversation to share with a friend. And if there's a colleague at work to say, hey, I heard this conversation and why don't you listen to it and let's talk about it.
You mean to share this episode?
Yeah, literally share this episode with a colleague or a team.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, every time I talk about this with somebody, I think they're going to go, oh, and roll their eyes. And every time they go, oh man, I want you to write that the next book you're working on, or I want to hear more about this.
You know, Pat, one of my favorite quotes is sometimes you have to act your way into a new way of thinking. But, you know, a lot of people want to think their way into a new way of acting. Instead, you should just act your way into a new way of thinking. So I would imagine that there are people out there who are like, I don't know if I believe that's true. And maybe if I theoretically believe that work was about healing, I might change my behavior. It's like, actually, just go try it. Do what Tracy said. Go talk to another person about their wounds and be vulnerable about your own and try it. And that might actually then flip the switch on, oh man, this could be a place, this should be a place where we talk about those things, as opposed to, oh, let me wait until theoretically I agree with Pat and you know, to change my behavior at work.
Right. Very good. You know, one other thing to do is read something about it. Like this book, Be Healed, I think is fantastic. Bob Schutz. Just take a look at that book, go to the back and where he lists the seven kinds of wounds and the things. It's a very spiritual book. It's a Christian book. And it just shows like what people say to themselves and the vows they make and why it causes problems in their lives. So even doing something like that, reading something and sharing a slide with somebody or a graphic that allows people to talk about it. The other thing I would say is, I'd like everybody to audit whether the place where they work and the places they worked in the past have been places that encouraged them and helped them become better, or whether that broke them down and probably made it harder to get better. And then ask themselves, is this environment that I'm in, my department, my team, my company, do I think that this is a tailwind for people to get better, or is it headwinds for them? I think do a little self-audit. And sometimes that will make you realize that there's a few concrete steps you might take to move in that direction. All righty. That's as much of a landing of the plane as we're going to do. Okay, doing an unpaid advertisement on an edition like this, I guess I'm going to try to lighten it up a little bit. This is the weirdest unpaid ad. We were having a great conversation in the office yesterday, and I'm going to do an unpaid ad for Sherpas. We were talking about people that climb mountains, which we think is kind of crazy, and they risk their lives just so they can go to the top of Everest, and they lose a nose in frostbite, or so many of them die, and it just seems so crazy. And then you think about these Sherpas that do it all the time, and they carry the rich people's stuff, and they go up, they go down, nobody celebrates them, and it's like, way to go, Sherpas. And there's Sherpas in society that are unheralded people that do great things, and nobody notices them, and other people get noticed, and so we're going to do an unpaid ad for the Sherpa.
I love it.
I think you had a book, didn't you? One of you guys had a book to read about this.
One of my favorite all-time books is Into Thin Air. And it's the story of the Mount Everest disaster written by John Krakauer. And you're right. The Sherpas are such the unsung heroes. And Cody probably has a documentary that he's going to say that he watched about Sherpas. Go ahead, Cody.
Well, I will say, and I totally respect the job that Sherpas do, but they should stop carrying rich people's stuff up Mount Everest and let them try to get up on their own. I know it's a business, but there's something.
It's like in the Baseball Hall of Fame, if you have an asterisk by your name, because you know, it's like, did you do Everest really? Or did somebody else kind of carry you up there?
Was there a mint on your pillow when you got to the top?
The Sherpa is the steroids of mountain climbers.
Exactly.
The asterisk.
And there is a documentary called 14 Peaks, which actually shines light on the Sherpas that do. So there you go, Bo. It's amazing. They didn't get enough press for the amazing accomplishment they did because they were Sherpas. So go watch it. It's incredible.
Karen has seen it. Yeah. She vouches for that. It's fascinating. Okay. So Sherpas, that's our unpaid ad today. Hey, everybody, thanks for joining us on this unique, a little bit longer and thoughtful podcast. We'd love to hear from you. If you've been at a company where you've experienced healing or that really helped people do that, we'd love to hear from you. Tell us the stories because we think this is important. And that's it today. We'll talk to you next time on At the Table. God bless.